Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
In preparations for the game against Georgia on Saturday, Jim McElwain met with the media on Wednesday, the Florida coach, and I would dare say that he had one of the strangest exchanges with reporters I can remember any SEC coach having in quite some time. And I'm not quite sure what it means for the game against Georgia on Saturday, but as I've been kind of talking about and pointing out throughout the week here, there is a stark contrast right now with the way that Georgia seems to be going about its business in preparation for the game, and the way that at least publicly Florida seems to be going about its business in preparation for the game here as well. We'll kind of get into some of that and talk about a lot of that on the program here today. Let me start with this. And listen, this is just a joke. He's not serious when he says this. This is just something that McElwain does for fun here. But he's asked the question that everybody wants to know, and every reporter tries to phrase in a way that he'll get an answer. But when you hear it out loud, it's like, well, no, I'm not going to answer that. You know, McElwain was asked, hey, can you tell me where Georgia's weak? Can you tell me where Georgia would appear to have some vulnerabilities, where you might be able to attack the Dogs? And McElwain kind of has a funny answer, but like a lot of funny things, sometimes truth is hidden in humor, and maybe here from Jim McElwain is an example of some truth actually being hidden in something McElwain said, trying to be humorous. Here he is.
I'm not going to give Kirby the game plan, but I'll say this, they are perfect. How's that? They got nothing to work on, but I think the big thing there is he's got them playing with a belief. You know, he's really, that's something that you really see him doing, and I know they're whatever on the revenge tour or whatever they had a year ago, and we're one of those pieces, so it should make for a fun game.
Now, listen, he's being sarcastic when he says that, but every Georgia fan does like the idea of thinking, yeah, you know what, UGA is on a revenge tour, and Florida really is the next sort of pillar to fall in that revenge tour as Georgia goes and gets revenge for all the teams that beat it in 2016, or in the case of Florida, all the wins that the Gators have been compiling here over the course of the last three decades. Now, McElwain's not being serious when he says that, but there is a degree to which Georgia fans hope that's what's going on here. There is a degree to which the Georgia fans are certainly hopeful that Georgia will get a measure of revenge against Florida on Saturday. And obviously, he says all of that as sort of a setup to act like Florida's got no chance against Georgia on Saturday. And as he said, Georgia should just think of themselves as being perfect and not think of themselves as having anything to work on. But one of the things that I think makes these kinds of exchanges nice for Georgia fans, even though McElwain's trying to be funny, is that there is a degree to which that Georgia is sort of, at least appearingly, impervious to any kind of thought about let's go out and get revenge against Florida, or any kind of thought about, hey, let's look ahead to the first college football playoff ranking that comes out on Tuesday, or really any kind of that kind of stuff. Georgia just would not seem to be the kind of program right now that's falling into that trap. And in some cases, this may be myth-making, and in some cases, this may be just sort of constructing a narrative where maybe a narrative doesn't exist. You'll actually hear me talk to Seth Emerson about that a little later on today's program. But there is also an element of that that just sort of feels true. I saw a quote from Sony Michel, the Georgia running back, 24/7 Sports had it. That's where I read it. May have been everywhere. Maybe on DogNation.com as well. I just happened to see it there, where he said, you know what, it doesn't even feel like we're an undefeated team right now. It feels like, you know, we're the kind of team that is just going to keep going out there and plugging. We practice so hard, and the coaches are on us so much at practice, it doesn't even feel like we're undefeated. And I would say the same thing. Yeah, after the game on Saturday, maybe the Georgia players will look back on the game and say, you know what, it was a measure of revenge. And you know what? This was for the guys that have been in this program that haven't won, or the guys in the history of this program that didn't win as much against Florida as they'd like to. But I don't gather that's the mindset that Georgia has going into the game on Saturday. I think that's kind of a nice thing to see. But as I mentioned a moment ago, you know, this is not just McElwain talking about Georgia here. It was also another sort of strange exchange with the media with Jim McElwain on a number of issues. We'll get to the weird death threat stuff in a moment, but let me start with this. Here on Dog Nation Daily this week, we've had a little bit of fun with the fact that Jim McElwain seems to just let his players kind of go out and talk whatever trash they want to talk about Georgia or any other opponent leading up to the game. And McElwain on Wednesday was asked, hey, do you have any kind of problem with any of this kind of stuff? Here's kind of the interesting exchange McElwain had with a reporter on that subject.
Some of them were pretty confident, maybe even borderline cocky. You okay with that? Some bulletin board material, maybe some trash talk, whatever you want to call it.
I would hope they're confident. You know, they've had good preparation and really knowing that you're prepared to go to play. I see it as they're excited as well. And we'll find out on Saturday.
Ryan,
and I'm sure he's got it all up.
Oh, sure.
So there's no doubt.
Did you tone it down? Did you tell them to tone it down after Monday? Or
no, they have their right.
It's the part there at the end that I find so bizarre. And maybe, you know, if you're not a Georgia fan or you don't have a dog in this fight, maybe you find it refreshing that McElwain says, my players have a right to go out and say what they want to say. This is a free country. I'm going to give them free speech. And maybe if you're a Gator guy and you're sitting here in this room with me right now, you might say, hey, listen, that helps McElwain on the recruiting trail. Players want to come to that program and play for Jim McElwain because he's not going to try to muzzle them with what they say to the media. He's not going to sort of force them to kind of become some sort of personality they're not. He's going to allow them to be free and express themselves and be who they are, because pretty clearly a lot of other SEC teams don't really want to do that. But it is just shocking how outside the norm that McElwain and Florida are compared to the rest of the SEC. And in this regard, McElwain saying, no, my guys are free to say whatever they want to say, and I hope that I hope that they are confident. I hope that is the way they feel. That is not the viewpoint that almost any other SEC coach would take on this. And listen, it'd be one thing, as we talked about yesterday, if, you know, Florida was some sort of schoolyard bully who was just sort of shoving everybody around. But really, what Florida has kind of been more as of late is more like a LeVar Ball type guy. You know him, the dad of the NBA player Lonzo Ball, who's always walking around bragging about everything that his son could do or he could do. And yet, in the case of, LeVar Ball, almost all his braggadocious things either didn't come true in the past or have no chance of coming true in the present. I mean, it seems like that's kind of where Florida is right now. They're talking a lot of trash about things they're going to do, but in the games they talk trash, they almost never seem to win. And obviously Georgia fans hope that's true again on Saturday as well. And frankly, I think that the trash talk from the Gator side this week has been just one of the things that sort of energized and kind of breathed new life into this rivalry, a game that Georgia already wants to win, and just sort of extra fuel and extra motivation to truly make Dog Nation Gator haters, and from that standpoint, it's probably not such a bad thing. There's actually one more thing I want you to hear from Jim McElwain, though, as well, and this is kind of on a more serious subject. And, you know, it speaks once again to the level of preparation that Georgia has had and is having right now, getting guys healthy, getting guys focused, ready to go in and dominate this football game. And Florida, who's kind of spent the week sort of, I don't know, circling the drain, going around in circles, at least would seem to be the case here, including the allegations of death threats from Jim McElwain earlier in the week that was almost immediately met with suspicion by media members, maybe even his own employer. And I want you to hear this, and I want you to really pay attention to just how weird all of this is. Jim McElwain's asked a direct question. Did somebody threaten you and your family? And listen to how not direct McElwain's answer is. And after the clip, the thing that we're left to wonder is there any other way to interpret this other than a negative way for Jim McElwain? Here is a strange moment from Wednesday.
Jim, were you and your family directly threatened, and when was it?
Sure. Obviously, I understand that's the news. It goes with the territory. And you know what? That's... It's hard to leave sometimes, and yet, how much I care about this program, these players, obviously everything that goes in with it, but ultimately allowing, one or two, and who knows even who it was, right? You don't know, it's anonymous, and that is what it is, and I'm confident we're all right.
Ought to be a simple yes or no answer, and McElwain gives you a million words. None of those were yes. Yes, this did actually happen. Which just sort of speaks to the contrast that exists between the Dogs and the Gators right now. One program has given its fans a million reasons to be proud thus far in the 2017 season. The other program has given its fans probably reasons to be embarrassed. That doesn't dictate what's going to happen on Saturday. Georgia's still got to go out and win the game, but Dog fans have never been more motivated than they are right now to actually go out and see that take place. Before I move on to the program, let me also take a moment to look back to the past for a moment. Our Roxy Jackson here at DogNation.com had a chance to catch up this week with the former legendary coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, Vince Dooley, who, as you might imagine, when asked about how he thought the cocktail party was going to play out on Saturday, well, he likes the Dogs. Here's Roxy with Vince Dooley.
I think Georgia will win the ball game. Yeah, but they'll be challenged. I mean, Florida's defense is good. They'll play hard, but I think we're better, and I think the spirit is just as well. It's good. So I think we'll win despite the fact that Florida will be at its best.
And then a little more from Coach Dooley. What was his best memory of the game against the Florida Gators? Well, if you're a longtime Georgia fan, you can probably guess this one as well, thinking all the way back to Ballou to Lindsey Scott in 1980.
Well, there's a lot of them, but probably the 80 season when we had a play called Buck Ballou to Lindsey Scott, which was a play that won the game when it looked like it was going to be lost, which eventually led to the national championship. So that would be the best.
So good memories there for Georgia fans with Vince Dooley back in 1980. And certainly there's a thought that a lot more of those memories can be added in the years ahead under Kirby Smart. And maybe some of those can begin as soon as this Saturday. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It's good to have you with us on the program. No matter how you may be getting to us, whether it's on Facebook Live, of course, we're there for you each and every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page. We're also on the radio at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref and in podcast form at theworldfamousdognation.com. Post the show for you on iTunes and pretty much wherever podcasts are found. We'll try to make Dog Nation Daily really easy for you to find. And we are now down to very small numbers for our Gator Hater Countdown. Georgia, Florida, the game we've been talking about all week long and all year long here on Dog Nation Daily, just 2 days away. We are excited about that. We've got a big show planned for you tomorrow as we count down the final day before the game. And, of course, it's great to have you on Dog Nation Daily to do that. And if you're going to the game, hope you'd be with us for our Dog Nation Invasion to Jacksonville and our big tailgate that starts at 10 a.m. right there at the touchdown lot off Bryan Street near Gate 6 there. We're going to be there starting at 10 a.m. on Saturday. We'll have a Dixie Vodka tasting bar going on for you there for those who are 21 and up. We'll have television set up. Jeff Sintel and I are going to be watching all the games with you on those big screens, hanging out, talking some Georgia football. And while supplies last, we have our red Gator Hater t-shirts. Now, I'm wearing the black today if you're watching on Facebook Live, but I'll be wearing the red again tomorrow and with you on Saturday as we give a whole bunch of those away on Saturday at our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate. Also, if you're going to be in Jacksonville, make plans to join us on Friday night for a big event. It's at Dos Gatos, which is downtown Jacksonville. That's 123 East Forsyth Street in Jacksonville. We're going to be hanging out starting at 8 p.m. with the folks from Dixie Vodka there. So if you're in Jacksonville on Friday night looking for sort of a pregame to the cocktail party, come on by and hanging out with us, Dixie Vodka, Dog Nation there at Dos Gatos Restaurant in Jacksonville, 123 East Forsyth Street. It'll be Friday starting at 8 p.m. there for that. So if you're going to be doing that, we'd love to drink a little Dixie Vodka with you kind of leading into the cocktail party on Saturday. We've got current CBS broadcaster, the guy doing the play-by-play for Georgia, Florida on Saturday, Brad Nessler, on the program in just a few minutes. We'll hear from Seth Emerson here as well. But before any of that, let me squeeze in some of our Gator Hater roll call here. Now, we've been really behind in terms of getting all these out. Many of you have been great about sending in your messages. We'll do as many of these as we can here today and then do some more shouts out on the final day tomorrow. But you've been reaching out to me at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter, showing me that you're just as big of a Gator Hater as I am. And we'll show you some of these on social media right now that have been sent in. Give some folks a chance to say hello, including John on Twitter, who said, "I try to avoid agreeing with you, but now I'm 100% in agreement with your assessment of the Florida rivalry. Let's go out there and beat them on Saturday." John says, "It's always nice to convert a Gator hater." I like at Dig 2294 on Twitter, who gives you the Florida F logo with the crying Jordan face kind of hidden in there. Pretty good stuff from Dig on Twitter. We'll show you a couple more. Steve O'Mac kind of making fun of the death threat allegations by Jim McElwain with a death by chocolate ice cream. Steve O says, "Eat the ice cream or else." KN Dog 2 on Twitter showing the black Gator Hater t-shirt. KN Dog, we appreciate that. She says, "Got mine," and we certainly appreciate that, Kate. Thanks so much. Scott Barman's got a great response to the Florida trash talk from earlier this week. He says, "Some talk trash, we take it out. Go Georgia." Terrific meme there from Scott, who's a terrific dog. Dog Nation reader and Dog Nation Daily listener and viewer. Scott Krizzler's got the Christmas story the bunny kid and says that outfit's still better looking than the uniforms that Florida wore the other day. Pretty funny stuff from Scott. Coach E17 on Twitter sends us a trophy here of, I guess, maybe a little bit of a golf tournament he has with his friends or some sort of championship they have going on. It's their Gatorator Championship, and that resides with Dog Nation right now. So that's really good stuff to see. We'll show you some more of these later on in the week here on Dog Nation Daily, but really good stuff there. You can continue to send those in at Dog Nation Daily and on Twitter, and we'll try to hit some more of those before we are done with the week. Really fun show for us tomorrow. But for now, though, let's get ready to hear Brad Nessler in just a moment, CBS broadcaster, and Seth Emerson right now taking a look at everything going on with the game against the Dogs and the Gators on Saturday. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll say hello to Seth Emerson, getting ready to head to Jacksonville for his coverage of Georgia-Florida for DogNation.com all weekend long. And Seth, it's always great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily. And if you don't mind, let me start with this. You know, you wrote about Jake Fromm and his first opportunity to kind of have a Jacksonville moment on Saturday. He's obviously kind of been a big topic of conversation from the Florida side of things because of what Chauncey Gardner had to say. But if I were to ask you to kind of predict the result of the game and the way that it's going to play out, how big of a factor do you think Jake Fromm is likely to be? Is Georgia going to be able to just run it the way that Kirby Smart wants to, or does Fromm have to make some big throws here for Georgia to get this win?
Oh, no, I mean, these Georgia games lately have played out so differently, it's hard to say for sure, and Florida just seems like such an enigma lately also. I mean, it does seem like strength on strength, so to speak, with Florida's run defense against Georgia's run offense. So does that put the game in Jake Fromm's hands a little bit more? But I could see this as a much lower scoring game than Georgia has had recently, and that Kirby Smart and Jim Chaney are perfectly content with that. And they don't want to have Jake Fromm risk too much, but have a few well-timed throws. So, I mean, I don't know for sure really there. I think that they'll try to, you know, they'll probably just still try to ride Nick Chubb and Sony Michel in the run game, but have Jake Fromm do what he's capable enough to keep Florida honest, which he's shown he can do.
I think the reason why I ask you that is because I think Gardner's statement is indicating, and obviously, you know, the Florida players sort of say what they say, you know, from week to week, year to year anyway. But in Gardner's case, I do think it indicates kind of a perception about Jake Fromm that I would say borders on misperception, that some people, because the overall passing yard numbers aren't, you know, necessarily all that eye-popping, they assume that Fromm is having only an average year or, you know, maybe only a limited quarterback. But the truth is, when you start sort of identifying the yards per attempt and you know, stats like that, he's actually having probably a better year than people like Chauncey Gardner probably realize. You think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, he leads the SEC in yards per attempt, which when you get into statistical analysis these days, those are the kind of stats that are becoming more and more important. Like, I might, for instance, in my by the numbers, start to emphasize, like, instead of the traditional total offense and total defense numbers, which is just total yards allowed per game, make it like yards per play, which is maybe more indicative. And Jake Fromm, leading the SEC in yards per attempt, says something, and it was just kind of funny the way that Chauncey Gardner said that, because it was like, well, I guess you haven't watched film yet, because,
right,
yeah, they throw some slants, but you know, I've seen some bombs. I've seen some deep throws. You know, ask Isaac Nauta about that, you know, over the middle. And in my mind, I'm picturing a few of those at Missouri. So maybe he had just watched the first 2 or 3 weeks and they hadn't gotten to the Missouri game or the Tennessee and Vanderbilt games yet. But, yeah, I mean, he's done more than throw slants for sure.
And I like your idea about kind of changing the way that sometimes we look at stats because, you know, listen, if you look at just the total offense, just the total defense, the one thing you don't factor in is the pace with which teams want to play. And that kind of goes back to what we were just saying about Fromm a moment ago. A lot of what you've seen from Fromm is sort of dictated by the pace with which Kirby Smart wants to try to play, that chopping wood, see what you can do early in the game, make the other team quit. When you sort of want to dictate that slow running game style of play on your opponent, the way that Alabama kind of used to, they've sped up things in recent years. But when you're doing that kind of stuff, your overall total yards sometimes don't exactly sort of t- tell the story of just how dominant you can be on offense at times.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia's just in the mode of, and they knew coming into this season that they were going to have a good defense. They didn't know just how good it would be, and so far it's been really good, with the exception of the Missouri game. And so they knew that offensively, when they were planning for it, they had to just kind of do enough. They could play within themselves. And obviously some of that changed when Eason got hurt and then Fromm goes in and wins the job. But they do just enough. And that means that that's part of the reason they're not too risky on offense too. They don't feel like they have to put up 7 points every time they touch the ball. So if they have a three and out, or if they have a drive that only, you know, gets past the marker once, but uses up a little bit of time, they're fine with that because they feel confident in their defense. And I think after the high-flying Missouri game, I think you're going to see kind of a more traditional approach, at least Georgia traditional approach against Florida, where it'll be a little bit more run-oriented.
You got a chance to talk to J.R. Reed, Lorenzo Carter earlier in the week about some of the things the Florida players had said. We were just talking about a moment ago. And, you know, you've had a chance to do a lot of these kind of player interviews, and you've been around this program for a while. And I guess there is the perception that what's said publicly may be a little bit different than what actually takes place behind the scenes privately. I mean, do you think that the narrative that Georgia under Kirby Smart is going to use this stuff effectively, maybe it did that with Jonathan Abram for the Mississippi State game, and maybe it'll do that for the Florida game? I mean, how true do you think that is?
I think it's like any team. I would be surprised if there's much deviation from team to team. It's just everyone's kind of got the same playbook when it comes to these things. Now, publicly, you say, I don't care about that. Maybe you have a nice little wink and a smile about it. But behind the scenes, they talk about it and they mention it. Now, I fall into the category of, does bulletin board material really motivate people more? I mean, if you needed it to motivate you, you know, especially in Georgia's case, you know. Now, if it was going the other way, you know, Florida, for one thing, is kind of reeling emotionally, and you could see where there'd be a temptation to pack it in. Those 9 guys suspended, you know, Jim McElwain going off his rocker a little bit, but if Georgia players started throwing some verbal volleys at Florida, that might get some Florida people to go, hey. You know, whoa, no, you know, I want a piece of them. But Georgia, if they needed any extra motivation, there would have been something wrong. I mean, they've lost to Florida 3 straight years. That's one check mark in they should be motivated. They're 7-0 and trying to play for a national championship. That's another check mark. I mean, I don't think they needed anything extra coming into this game.
You mentioned the Jim McElwain stuff from this week, and listen, it's always going to be a competitive market for the craziest SEC story. There are a few of those every single season, but this has got to rank up there somewhere near the top. He says this, almost immediately doubters kind of emerge, including maybe his own employers, and yesterday when given a chance to kind of offer a defense of himself, that wasn't much of a full-throated defense. I mean, You've covered a lot of stories, a lot of different things. I mean, as a reporter, what do you make of the fact that almost no one seems to be taking what he said at face value?
Well, yeah, I mean, I read the transcript of the Monday presser where he mentioned it, and it was kind of funny because he kind of mentions it a little offhand, and reporters just immediately start coming back to it and being like, wait, hold on, back up. What'd you say? And they kept asking that several times, and it was just, and he was like, well, let's move on. Like, no, you can't drop a bomb like that and then just kind of, you know, not really expand on it. But then, of course, it gets kind of ratcheted up with Florida's administration statement basically not backing up their coach. Mm-hmm. So it's obvious there's a little bit of tension there. If he had received death threats, that would be one thing. It would be bad, but everyone would say, this is just, you know, SEC football fans, you know. But the fact that he didn't expound on it and didn't really provide any evidence for it, and then the statement by his superiors that apparently, like, cast doubt on it, really kind of took it to a really weird level. And I kind of thought back to the shark thing where – that, you know, it probably wasn't Jim McElwain in the photo. Who cares? It was an internet fun photo meme, whatever. It was just something to laugh at. But Jim McElwain, when he was asked about it, which it was, you know, it was the kind of thing where I'm not sure I would have even asked him as a beat writer. I don't remember who did ask him. It was just kind of funny, you know?
Right.
But then when he was asked about it, he was like this, he said something like, you know, an attack on my family. It's like, whoa, come on. I mean, he's always seen from afar to be kind of a nice, cheerful guy, maybe kind of a regular guy, but these two things, the shark thing and this death threat thing, make you go, I don't know, he's got a little bit of a flair for the dramatic.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. You wrote this week about Georgia practicing with some wet footballs simply because the forecast at one point called for rain. I think now, I guess it's somewhat changed. It may not rain in Jacksonville on Saturday, but because there was the threat of rain, Georgia practiced with wet footballs. Is that an attention to detail that the previous coaching staff would have taken?
Yeah, and they did. They did often. They dipped balls in buckets.
Because you understand the narrative that, you know, some people are going to kind of put out there is that just goes to show you how focused Kirby Smart is, just as it goes to show you how attuned to details that he is. But you're saying in this case, that's not that great a difference from what the previous staff would have done.
I distinctly remember before the Alabama game in 2015, Grayson Lambert, Bryce Ramsey and company throwing with wet footballs that were dipped in buckets. It's a fairly standard football thing, and obviously it did not work for Grayson Lambert and Bryce Ramsey in that particular game. It had probably more to do with Alabama's defense coached by Kirby Smart in that game. But that's there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I mean, yeah, stuff like this, everyone just wants to kind of latch onto a narrative and everything. And I think you can praise the current staff and what they're doing without kind of ripping the former one and acting like they had no idea what they were doing and were just terrible, especially when they had success when they were here, and that coach is also unbeaten down where he is.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Kirby does do some stuff different, and, you know, this whole philosophy of making practices harder than the games, that is a little bit of a change. There's a little different mentality stuff, but specifically as far as, like, throwing with wet footballs, that's something that's fairly standardly done across college football.
So something else you wrote this week that I thought was really interesting about how Kirby Smart manages his 85-man roster and the folks that he brings in, including J.R. Reed, who's having a big season for Georgia defensively. But it was a particular sentence that you wrote that I thought was really interesting. You said that while Kirby's bringing in a lot of players, and I'm paraphrasing here, he's not giving up on that many players. Kendall Baker is an example of that, a guy that's kind of worked his way back into a starting role. And Seth, the reason why I thought that was interesting is because I work in the afternoons with Mike Johnson, who was a part of the transition at Alabama with Nick Saban. And Mike will tell you that going from 2007 to 2008, who Alabama sort of jettisoned from the program was just as important as who it brought into the program. But at least in this particular instance, this is a way that Kirby Smart seems to be a little different than Nick Saban, because there hasn't been, as you wrote, some sort of mass exodus. Kirby Smart has been content to let a few of these guys kind of hang around, see if they can find a home, and some of them have.
Yeah, I mean, and I didn't mention this in the story, but I almost did, that, like, A.J. Terman, when he transferred before spring practice even began, one thing Kirby Smart said was, well, A.J. didn't give us a chance. You know, we wanted, you know, he didn't give us and I think Terman was right, that he saw the depth chart and he wasn't going to play and he was ready to go. But, you know, Kirby, you know, didn't just let the fourth, fifth string tailback, whatever he was, come into his office and say, yeah, go, I'll see you. You know, he likes to keep these guys around because you never know. Part of it is the overall practice, you know, the overall philosophy of making practices harder. Well, if, you know, your scout team's better, frankly, when you're at 85 scholarships and you've got the best players possible on your team. So that's part of it too. But someone like Kendall Baker, that like nobody had projected as a starter entering this year on the offensive line, who has ended up being a starter and a quality one so far. That's another example of, hey, you never know. And Kendall Baker was a 4-star O lineman back in the day. So, you know, just kind of a late bloomer. But there was another point I was going to make, but I'm totally blanking on it. The turnover. Yeah, the lack of attrition since Kirby Smart took over actually does surprise me a little bit. But I think if you look back at Alabama, Mike Johnson may tell you this, Gentry, this is my friend, I think he was covering Alabama at the time. I think something that happened there was know, Saban may have come in and had some concerns about maybe the culture of the program, and that may have been part of it too. I think the textbook scandal may have happened around then. I don't think it was under Saban, but you know, it may have happened, and then Saban had to kind of clean it up, that kind of stuff. But you know, that stuff wasn't as prevalent at Georgia when Smart got here. He had a roster that was pretty in pretty good shape, and you know, I mean, if he had inherited the 2010-2011 Georgia Bulldogs, it would have been a different story. I mean, that's when there was a lot of attrition because Richt was just kind of cleaning up the locker room. I don't think there was a sense they needed to do that this time around.
Hey, Seth, we'll look forward to your coverage from Jacksonville this weekend at DogNation.com. Thanks for your time on our program, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always fun having Seth Emerson on Dog Nation Daily. Appreciate his time. And as we get ready to transition here to our SEC Through, I'll remind you that you can check out AT&T SEC Country Live coming up 3 p.m. Eastern Time today on the SEC Country Facebook page. We'll talk about all the big SEC stories there on that program. And as we're thinking about Saturday and thinking about the Dog Nation invasion to Jacksonville, don't forget, Dog Nation Invasion to Jacksonville, brought to you in part by friends at Kroger. Now, we'll all think about the cocktail party this weekend, but then as soon as you get back into town or as soon as that game's over, the next thing that may be on your family's schedule, in addition to our big tailgate on that Saturday, may be Halloween. And listen, when you start thinking about that, you got to make sure you got the candy, you got to make sure you got the decorations, you got to make sure everything you got to have. And that's why Kroger's the place you want to be to think about all of that kind of stuff. I told you the other day, my family's already stocked up at Kroger on all of our Halloween stuff. We got two big shopping carts full of Halloween stuff, and you got two young kids. That's just what they like to do, and so that's what we did. It's going to be at Kroger, and if you want a quick, convenient way to get everything that you need from Kroger for Halloween, anything else, check out Kroger Click List online at Kroger.com. You can find out more about that. We appreciate Kroger bringing the Dog Nation Invasion to you. Bad news and big news coming out of Tennessee, as yesterday afternoon we find out that star running back John Kelly and former four-star recruit linebacker Will Ignat, both in the car together, cited for marijuana, you know, possession, drug paraphernalia. And now both Kelly and Ignat, Kelly's the guy that matters most because Ignat, while he may have a big career at some point in time, for now is just a third-string linebacker. But Kelly's the star player on this team, and he's not going to play on Saturday against Kentucky for the Vols. And, you know, my point on this is I don't know that you can directly blame Butch Jones for Kelly and Ignat getting in trouble here. It seems a little tough to kind of draw that straight line from one to the other. But Butch Jones is going to be blamed for this. And for a guy in Butch Jones who's kind of hanging on by a string in terms of his employment at Tennessee, I think this is the kind of thing that just runs the risk of sort of severing that tie for him even more. It's just another bad headline for John Curry to deal with here. And Curry seems to sort of biased in favor of trying to find a way to keep Butch Jones. But the Kelly arrest, I think, actually makes it a little tougher to do that. So Tennessee, without its best offensive player for the game against Kentucky, already a point spread underdog, and winning that game just became a lot tougher. Thought that Marcus Spears on the SEC Network had something interesting to say about Georgia and its competition for the SEC East. Spears said, and we'll talk more about this on AT&T SEC Country Live today, that when he looks at the landscape in the SEC East, it's actually South Carolina. More so than this week's opponent, Florida. Obviously, they're 3-3 now with a couple of conference losses. More so than anybody else, it's South Carolina, who's the chief competition for Georgia. And Dog fans will obviously remember and know that it's that South Carolina game that looms the week after Florida, coming back to Athens for that CBS 3:30 start. I don't think Georgia's going to run the risk of overlooking anybody, but what Spears' words indicate is there's no room for hangover, no time for hangover coming after the Florida game, because Spears says Georgia's going to face a South Carolina team that Will Muschamp's kind of getting something out of right now. And I do think that Muschamp deserves credit for the job that he's done with the Gamecocks so far this year. Eventually, he's going to have a pretty good roster there because Muschamp's a pretty good recruiter. He proved that at Florida. He's going to come from the same cloth as Kirby Smart. You expect him to find players. He found a couple last year, may even take a few this year that George would like to have. Rick Sandage comes to mind, for instance. But those guys aren't on campus yet, at least for the most part. You do have Jamias Williams there, but you don't have a lot of elite recruits there for South Carolina yet. You get some stuff out of Jake Bentley. You know, they've overcome the Deebo Samuel injury, and so far South Carolina is actually doing pretty well. And I do think Spears' words are kind of a nice reminder that the Florida game may be the one that I'm obsessed over, but once it's over, the next one's actually pretty big too. So I'm glad that Marcus Spears said what he said. And if you want to look ahead a little further, Danny Sheridan goes on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. Now, a lot of you don't know who Danny Sheridan is, but back in like the 80s and 90s, Sheridan was pretty famous as an odds maker. There's odds makers everywhere now. Sheridan at one point, though, was sort of the most well-known guy sort of putting point spreads out there. I think he was putting them out there for USA Today. That's one of the reasons why he kind of got a big name for himself. And he just swears up and down that Georgia is going to be a point spread underdog in November when it goes to Auburn. This also echoes what the Westgate in Las Vegas said. The Vegas Superbook, as it's called, also had Georgia the other day as a three-point underdog to Auburn. So Georgia undefeated. Earlier in our show, we played you a clip of Jim McElwain saying the Dogs were on a revenge tour and a perfect team right now, but at least not in the eyes of Vegas necessarily. Vegas, for the moment, still thinks that road trip to the Plains, Jordan-Hare Stadium against Auburn, is one that could be a challenge for Georgia. Vegas and Danny Sheridan say Georgia is going to be a point spread underdog there. One more quick story to get to for the SEC through. Peter Burns on Twitter, another SEC Network guy, saying, what if Georgia beats Florida on Saturday and Ohio State beats Penn State? Both those things are likely to happen. Both those teams are point spread favorite. If it does, Burns says that he thinks that both those teams would leapfrog Alabama in the college football playoff poll on Tuesday, and Bam would actually be number three when the first poll comes out. Obviously, there's not a whole lot of weight and value to the first poll, but it's kind of interesting to hear the guesswork going on there of exactly how that could play out on Tuesday. Interesting stuff. We'll make that your SEC through. And now let's welcome in Brad Nessler, who's going to call the game for CBS on Saturday, 3:30. And, of course, this is a game that's been on CBS for a number of years. And I guess, Mr. Nessler, this will be your first time getting to call this game as a member of the CBS broadcast team. But I'm sure you're just as excited about this as I would imagine you are. It's quite the backdrop for college football, is it not?
Sure is, Brandon. And, you know, I've probably seen every one of these games or the majority of them the last three or four decades, having lived around here, but never done one of these before. Been to the game a couple of times when I was doing the Falcons way back in the day, and we either had Dolphin or Bucks games the next day, something like that, so made a pit stop in Jacksonville to see the game. So from the press box standpoint, my first time, and, you know, obviously it's a huge game for Georgia, and, well, it's a big game for Florida, too, but bigger for Georgia right now.
And I guess, you know, not just as a CBS employee, but also as a resident of the South, how important is it for you to see this game stay in Jacksonville? Obviously, it's one of the few games that CBS will tell you before the year even begins that they're going to put this thing on the Saturday that it's played. I mean, how much does the neutral site aspect of this sort of add to the magnitude of the game, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's a lot of fun for the fans, obviously, and the people that get the opportunity to go and spend a whole weekend, you know, in that part of the country or wherever they might have a condo and that type of thing. And, you know, I know we're not supposed to call it outdoor cocktail party anymore,
sure,
but let's say it's the world's biggest outdoor reception, or to put it that way. That's the part I remember about going to the game, is just seeing the fans and how much fun they were having before and after the game. And I hope to partake in that a little bit. You know, I get to the game about 3 hours early, and I usually go around to a few tailgates or whatever and just surprise people, ask them if I can eat some of their food, and they look at me like, who's the guy with the tie on? That doesn't make any sense. I just think it's a great atmosphere. I hope it stays that way. I know, you know, there's been talk at times that making it a home and home deal, but it's pretty cool there.
You saw Georgia in person a little earlier in the season, seen them on film a lot. I mean, what do you think about Georgia at this point in the year? How impressed are you with them, especially compared to some of these national contenders that all of a sudden Georgia's being mentioned in the same breath with?
I think they belong there, Brandon. I think last time I talked to you, we were still thinking about what would happen if Jake Fromm had to throw the ball. Didn't really have to throw the ball against Missouri, but showed that he can, you know, and I guess that was my biggest question. I think everything else fits into place pretty much as far as great ground game, defense is really solid, you know, pretty good special teams, and it was just a matter of if they had to come from behind, which they really haven't had to do that yet. But I think Jake's come of age as a quarterback and playing great football right now. So, you know, this is one of those weird things, though. How many times has Georgia been in this situation? Most recently, I guess 3 years ago when they were 6-1, and I think Florida was 3-3 at that time, and everybody said, wow, they're just going to go and, you know, blow Florida's doors off, and that didn't work out so well. So there's a lot of football left, and when you really look at the rest of the Georgia schedule, just because almost every one of those games is a rivalry to some degree, they still have a lot of work to do, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point to bring up. But if you look at the side-by-side comparison between Georgia and the team you saw last Saturday, Alabama, I mean, there's still an element to me that where I'll say, you know, Alabama is solid almost every single position group in a way that Georgia may still be trying to round out its roster. I mean, have you kind of done the thing in your mind where you compare Georgia side-by-side to Alabama yet? Obviously, that's a showdown that could be looming for the SEC championship game.
Yeah, well, everybody hopes that right now, the way things are going. You know, they stack up really evenly, I think. This time a year ago, I probably wouldn't have said that. And when you go to an Alabama practice, and, you know, I looked at Gary last Thursday, and I said, you know, their small guys are even big. And that's just the way they're built. I mean, it's unbelievable. And, you know, they're so deep, especially in the backfield. You look at Georgia's backfield, and you go, how can it be any deeper? Well, you know, Alabama's is at least one or two more players deeper. That's just how good they are, just every position. I mean, they have flaws. They've had trouble with punt returns and things like that. But, you know, they're pretty solid in every capacity. And their backup quarterback could play for anybody. In fact, he'd be starting for Alabama if it wasn't for Jalen Hurts. So when you're deep enough that your second quarterback could play any place else in the league, any place else and maybe in the country, that shows how good you are. Now, is Georgia there yet? They're really close, I think. I mean, I really do. I think they stack up beautifully. It would be nice if it got to that point. And obviously, from our standpoint, if they were both undefeated the first weekend of December at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, we'd take it.
So Saturday, 3:30 p.m. is the time. Brad Nesser, Gary Daniels, and Allie DeForest on the sideline. It is a great backdrop for college football, and it's a game that, whether you're going to the game or not, everyone's got circle. We'll look forward to the CBS call, and Brad, we'll look forward to having you here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon.
You got it, Brandon. Good talking to you, buddy.
Good stuff there from Brad Nesler here on Dog Nation Daily. Look forward to that call on CBS with him on Saturday. All right, let me close out with this. So how many of you have seen the commercial that Jeff Sintel and I have shot for Kroger? It's at DogNation.com right now. We may have to break this thing down tomorrow. The people in the room, have y'all seen it yet? Thumbs up, thumbs down, be honest. Michael, thumbs up, thumbs down, be honest. Have you really seen it? You don't seem very convinced. I feel like we did okay. I feel like there's some moments towards the end where maybe I sort of forced the acting here a little bit. Now, obviously, the Kroger message is perfect. We do believe Kroger Click List is an awesome, awesome spot to really make grocery shopping more convenient than it's ever been before. I think it's great that Kroger's doing that. But while that's great, maybe my acting skills, maybe not so great. And there's the one moment where I sort of lean down. You see my bald head right there in the camera. We'll break this down some more tomorrow. I hope you'll be with us. It's Dog Nation Daily.